wants me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
I know it's early morning on a Sunday, but if you hear my stomach rumbling, then it's all Gordon Goldsborough's fault. And we'll find out why it's to do with his clue today. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia. Well, in fact, my mouth has been watering in anticipation of our conversation this morning.
So fill us in. Why are we all getting hungry?
Well, we're talking about a business that was once found in nearly every good-sized town in rural Manitoba, operated almost exclusively by single men. And these businesses dramatically expanded the worldview of those who patronized them.
What do you mean, expanding the worldview?
Well, I was referring to the culinary worldview, the idea of, that there are things we consider good to eat. So if I think back, for example, to what my farming ancestors would have eaten for a Sunday breakfast, it would probably have been things like porridge or bacon and eggs. In contrast, one of my favorite meals for Sunday morning, you know, I'm sorely missing this for the pandemic, is dim sum enjoyed at a Chinese restaurant in downtown Winnipeg. And I have to think that through the years, such restaurants helped to change people's views about food and, you know, maybe also their attitudes about multiculturalism.
So are you saying that most towns in rural Manitoba had a Chinese restaurant?
Yes, I am. And in fact, some of the larger towns, Birtle, Carberry, Deloraine, and Melitta come to mind, still do. Chinese restaurants began to operate in country towns over 100 years ago. And they were operated by single men, by which I mean that these men were not accompanied by wives and children. Now, most of them were not trained chefs. They saw a restaurant merely as a means to support themselves. So at least at first, these restaurateurs would make Chinese dishes for themselves and Western dishes for their customers. But I suspect that the tantalizing aromas that would emanate from the kitchen tempted at least some of the customers to ask for those Chinese dishes. And in time, the menu began featuring items from both cuisines. This lifestyle of early Chinese restaurateurs in rural Manitoba is described by a fascinating book that was published in 2011 by Professor Allison Marshall at Brandon University. And that book was entitled The Way of the Bachelor.
And why were they all bachelors?
Well, because many of these men did have families back in China that they were not permitted to bring into Canada. You know, these men were obliged to live alone here or possibly with other men who worked for them and who might be called, you know, a brother or a son or a nephew, not necessarily even blood relatives. And they supported their family by sending money back to China.
This refers to the Chinese head tax, right?
Right. From 1885 to 1923, the Canadian government severely restricted the immigration of Chinese people by imposing what was called a head tax. Now, initially, it was $50 a person in 1886, and that doesn't sound like very much, but consider that back in 1886, $50 was a lot of money. It increased then to $100 in 1900 and to $500 in 1903. And the whole idea was to make it nearly impossible for Chinese men to bring their wives, their children, their parents to Canada. Well, in fact, in 1923, it didn't get any better. In fact, it got worse. A new Chinese Immigrant Act virtually ended all Chinese immigration into Canada. The only way you could get in was with a special permit that had very strict qualifications. And as a result, between 1924 and 1946, the number of Chinese immigrants that were admitted to Canada was just 8. 8 for the whole nation. Now, that act was repealed in 1947. But, you know, the restrictions on Chinese immigration to Canada were not removed completely until 1967. I mean, I just can't imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, a really kind of dark chapter in Canadian history, I think most people can agree.
Absolutely. You know, and there are monuments to remind us of this regrettable period in Canadian history in the municipal cemetery in Brandon and in Assiniboine Park here in Winnipeg. You know, and yet I'd like to think that despite this hardship, these initial Chinese immigrants made a very positive contribution to Canadian life. And I would count among those contributions, making people like me crave the magnificent Chinese cuisine.
Okay, so where does the abandonment part come into this story?
Well, when I spoke with Allison Marshall recently, she told me that at one time, almost every town in southwestern Manitoba that she had studied for her book had a Chinese restaurant. Her book actually does give a partial list of the towns that had one. So let me just give you some idea of the breadth of the distribution of these restaurants. Places like Balder, Bertel, Boisevain, Carberry, Dauphin, Deloraine, Killarney, Melitta, Minnedosa, Neepawa, Russell, Shoal Lake, Souris, Verdun, Waskata. You know, and Chinese restaurants were found in other towns too. And I know that for a fact because her list doesn't include one that I'm familiar with. And that's the Paris Cafe at Newdale.
What is its history?
Well, in 1919, a Chinese businessman named Choi Him came to Newdale and he bought the hotel in Newdale and he operated that for a number of years. Then his next business venture was the Paris Cafe. He operated it from 1928 to 1938, so 11 years. At that time, he retired and his son, Choi Su, took over. In 1950, Su demolished the original Paris Cafe building, and he moved a former machine shop that dated from 1939 to the same site. It was right along the main street in Newdale. He renovated it into a modern cafe. He built a kitchen and a living quarters for himself at the back. And by all accounts, the Paris Cafe was a thriving business. Everybody came from far and wide to enjoy the food that Su provided. In 1970, Su moved to Brandon. And his family operated something called Sue's Chop Suey House for the next 30 years. It was apparently one of Brandon's most popular restaurants. Meanwhile, back in Newdale, the former Paris Cafe was occupied first by a community center and a lending library, later an insurance agency and liquor vendor. That has closed now. And in fact, if you drive down the main drag in Newdale, you're hard pressed to decide if the building is even being used. But I checked with my friend Duncan Waddell, and he assures me it is still being used as a private home, but no longer as a business, because in fact, many of the businesses in Newdale are not thriving anymore. And this isn't the only example where a popular Chinese restaurant has been lost. Another example is the very popular Rex Cafe at Carberry.
Why? What happened there?
Well, again, it's a story of a successful enterprise that declined. A vacant lot, in fact, at the corner of Main Street and 3rd Avenue in Carberry was where the Rex Cafe once sat, and it was operated by Chinese businessman Li Lo. But his was actually not the first Chinese restaurant in Carberry. That distinction belongs to something called the Royal Restaurant that opened in 1907 that was run by a man named Mi Hao. Now, there were also other restaurants. I mean, through the years, you look at the Carberry history, there was the King's Restaurant, the Carberry Cafe, the Bentown Restaurant, the Brookdale Cafe, the Liberty Cafe, all of them operated by Chinese businessmen. But I think the Rex might have had the greatest longevity of all of them. It was opened in 1920 by Wing Lau, and he was joined by his younger cousin, Li Lau, in 1922. In later years, Li was joined by his sons, Walter and York, but you notice there's no females mentioned anywhere in this list. And that's because, again, like many of these Chinese men, he was unable to bring his wife, his daughters into the country. But everyone seemed to have loved Li Lau. You know, in addition to meals, he served things like ice cream and soft drinks and candy and fruit, you know, real treats. He served tobacco and cigars. The Carberry teens saw the Rex as a cool place to hang out. And I come across so many memoirs of people, present residents of Carberry, former residents of Carberry, who just have so many fond memories of life at the Rex. He sold the restaurant in 1950 when he decided to move to Vernon, British Columbia, and he was finally able to bring his wife to Canada in 1957. But the tragic part of it is that was a year before he died. Imagine that. His whole life, his wife was on the other side of the planet, and he was not allowed to bring her here to Canada. The Rex building in Carberry, well, it continued on. It was used, in fact, as another Chinese restaurant for a few years. Ultimately, the building was fairly compromised and it was finally demolished in 1983. But Carberry is still one of those places that has a Chinese restaurant. There's something called the CVM Cafe, a couple of blocks away from the Rex, and it has been operated by over 40 years by a businessman from Hong Kong. So the long tradition of Chinese restaurants in rural Manitoba is still very much alive.
Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much. What's up for next week?
Well, next week, I'm going to address a question that I'm asked a lot, which is, how do I learn the history of my house? You know, when was it built? Who has lived in it through the years? So next week, we're going to tackle that question.
Excellent, Gordon. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, Nadia.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.